morning, ladies and gentlemen. A warm welcome from both of us to our full year results presentation. Dawn will take you through the numbers, and I will pick up the operational aspects, our take on the outlook, and an update on strategy. Before I hand over to Sean, I want to make a few comments in addition to the highlights on slide three. I think the last year has been truly unprecedented. I've been in the industry for almost 40 years, and I've never experienced a period of such extended uncertainty, disruption, and challenge of this scale. And what has stood out for me at Norcross has been the response, agility, and commitment of our people and our management teams. I've said this before, in tough times, you find out how good your teams are, and I'm convinced we have the best teams in the industry, and importantly, you will hear today how these results and the strong momentum support this view. We've also benefited from our decentralised and focused business model. We've responded faster than the competition. Our strong balance sheet, our inventory holdings, our supply chain infrastructure, particularly in China, and our leading service offer has meant that we have been the go-to supplier. This has meant that not only did we end last year in great shape, but as you can see from this morning's statement, we've also started the year, current year, very strongly, which I will return to later. In the meantime, I will now hand over to Sean to take you through the numbers.
Thanks, Nick. Morning, everybody. So as Nick says, I'm going to start off by running through the results, which clearly taking everything into account are a strong set of results, particularly when you think back to the main points of discussion from last year's presentations. So turning to slide five in the deck, revenues totaled £324.2 million, down 5.2% on a reported basis, and 0.7% higher on a constant currency like-for-like basis, adjusting for the 53 weeks in the prior year. The year was definitely a tale of two halves, if not four quarters. Reported underlying operating profit at £33.8 million was 4.6% higher than the £32.3 million reported last year, and 8.7% higher on a constant currency basis. The reported return on sales for the group was 10.4% compared to 9.4% in the prior year. The finance charge was £3.2 million in the year compared to £3.5 million last year. This includes a £1.7 million IFRS 16 finance charge compared to £1.9 million last year, a bank interest of £1.5 million, lower than last year's £1.6 million. Underlying profit before tax of £30.6 million was 6.3% higher than the prior year's £28.8 million. The £3.8 million exceptional operating charge includes the £2.4 million of COVID-19 related restructuring reported at the half year, plus a further £1.4 million charge against the closure of our Norcross Adhesives Middle East operation, which was not only impacted by COVID-19 in the year, but also tightening liquidity in the region. We have concluded that the timing of a meaningful recovery for the business was too uncertain, and it was best to orchestrate a controlled closure, which was actioned at the 31st of March just gone. The £9 million charge last year was the non-cash impairment of the assets of Johnson Tiles UK, a result of the group's COVID-19 divisional impact assessment. Acquisition-related costs of £3.7 million compared to £4 million in the prior year, and is entirely the non-cash intangible asset amortisation charge. The non-cash finance charge totaled £3.2 million compared to £0.7 million of income in the prior year, with this year's financial derivative fair value movement, a £2 million charge, compared to a £1.7 million credit in the prior year. We have now adopted a cash flow hedge accounting for all future forward foreign exchange contracts, which removes this volatile non-cash item from the income statement. So we'll now be accounting for the movements through other comprehensive income. The IAS 19 finance charge was £1 million compared to £0.8 million in the prior year, reflecting the higher pension deficit at the start of the year. This resulted in an increased reported profit before tax of £18.5 million compared to £15 million last year. Now, looking at the revenue and underlying operating profit bridges on slide 6. Starting with the top left-hand chart, total revenues decreased by £17.8 million in the year to £324.2 million. UK revenue was £0.9 million lower on a prorated basis, having been down £19.5 million in the first quarter alone. Despite the slight revenue reduction in the UK in the year, second half performances were up year on year in all of the businesses other than Johnson Tiles, although it performed markedly better than it did in the first half. It was pleasing to record £3.2 million of prorated constant currency revenue growth in South Africa, reflecting the timely actions by management throughout the year, responding to market conditions quicker than many of their competitors. Depreciation of the rand reduced revenue by £13.9 million in the year. In total, as shown in the bottom left-hand chart, group constant currency like-for-like revenue growth was 0.7%. Now looking at underlying operating profits charted on the right. Top right, underlying operating profit was £1.5 million higher than in the prior year at £33.8 million. The weakening of the rand reduced reported underlying operating profit in South Africa by £1.2 million. Underlying operating profit includes £3.5 million of furlough support in the UK and Ireland and £0.8 million in South Africa. The group provided for the repayment of £0.7 million of furlough support in respect of employees made redundant in the year. This was paid back this month. Bottom right, underlying operating profit in the UK at £26.9 million was £2.5 million higher than in the prior year, with the UK return on sales increasing from 10.8% to 12.2%. Underlying operating profit in South Africa was £1 million lower in the period at £6.9 million on a reported basis, albeit £0.2 million up in constant currency. The return on sales of 6.6% compared to 6.8% in the prior year. Resultant return on sales for the group was 10.4% compared to 9.4% in the prior year. Moving on to slide 7 to look at earnings and the dividend. The underlying tax charge for the year was £5.5 million and the effective tax rate 18%, slightly lower than expected due to the profit mix, and compares to a £6 million charge and an effective tax rate of 20.8% last year. We expect the tax rate for the forthcoming year to be similar to the prior year in the low 20s. Applying the tax charge, the underlying profit before tax of £30.6 million resulted in earnings attributed to shareholders of £25.1 million compared to £22.8 million in the prior year. Reported diluted underlying earnings per share was 31.1 pence. A 10.3% increase on last year's 28.2 pence per share. As a result of the unprecedented impact of COVID-19, the board decided that preservation of cash needed to be the priority last year and did not therefore propose a final dividend for financial year 20 or an interim for financial year 21. In light of the strong trading and cash generation performance during the year, the board has decided to declare a final dividend of 8.2 pence per share, which makes whole the interim dividend not paid at the half year. This is equivalent to a dividend cover of 3.8 times, consistent with the year ended 31st of March 2019. The group will now continue with its previous progressive, albeit prudent, dividend policy, which takes into account the group's growth strategy, other key stakeholders, future cash flow generation and earnings growth. Looking at the cash flow on slide 8. The group obviously made the preservation of cash and liquidity management the priority for the year. The group successfully generated underlying operating cash flow of £65.8 million compared to £38.4 million last year. This represented a conversion rate of 174% of underlying EBITDA compared to 99% in the prior year. The working capital inflow in the year was £21.8 million compared to a £4.8 million outflow in the prior year. Capital expenditure in the year at £2.8 million was tightly controlled, as it was in the previous year, and represented circa 0.5 times depreciation, as we curtailed all non-essential capital expenditure. Cash tax paid was £3.5 million compared to last year's £5.3 million. Interest paid was £3.2 million. Net cash flow in the year was £46.5 million and compared to a £0.4 million inflow last year. This performance is a testament to the actions of the management teams across the group and the resilience of the group's business model. This clearly has helped to strengthen the balance sheet and significantly improve the group's liquidity position. Turning to slide 9, net cash was £10.5 million, excluding finance lease liabilities, compared to net debt of £36.4 million a year earlier, reflecting this strong cash generation in the period. Net assets increased to £148.4 million compared to £104.4 million over the year, which includes a much reduced pension deficit. The group's underlying return on capital employed was 18.2% compared to 16.4% last year, and despite the impacts of COVID-19, remains ahead of the group's target of 15% through the cycle. Now, moving on to slide 10, pensions. The pension scheme position has also considerably improved in the year. The IS19 deficit has reduced significantly during the year to £18.3 million from £48.9 million, driven in large part by the recovery in asset values, which have recovered most of the value lost at the start of the financial year when COVID-19 lockdowns were first imposed. Assets increased by £35.9 million during the year, to £397.8 million. It is of note that this deficit is the lowest reported since 2011 and represents less than 10% of the group's current market cap. The discount rate reduced to 2.05% from 2.21% last year and assumed inflation increased from 2.55% to 3.25%, the impact of which was partially offset by changes in mortality assumptions. Cash contribution into the scheme was unchanged in the year at £3.3 million, paid in accordance with the recovery plan agreed in 2019. The company did not request a deficit recovery payment holiday during the year, despite the financial impact of COVID-19, which clearly highlighted the strength of the corporate covenant. We are confident that the trustee recognised this was a clear sign of the company's commitment to the scheme and reinforces their confidence in the group's growth strategy. Triennial actuarial valuation date 31st of March 2021 is now underway. As part of this, the impact of COVID-19 on the scheme will be fully assessed. The company and the trustee continue to work constructively together through the COVID-19 crisis, and we remain confident that this approach will continue and the pension scheme is appropriately funded and well managed. Finally, a brief COVID-19 recap, so turning to slide 11. The group acted swiftly at the start of the year to protect its employees and the business and has achieved this whilst at the same time having significantly strengthened its balance sheet and improved its liquidity position. Underlying operating profit includes £4.3 million of COVID-19 government job retention assistance, having repaid £0.7 million in respect of employees made redundant in the year. Underlying operating cash flow was a significant feature of the year. Of the £21.8 million working capital inflow, we expect about a half of this to reverse during the coming year as business normalises, plus we have £3 million of VAT to repay in the year as well. The exceptional cost of £3.8 million helped reduce the cost base and leaves the business in a stronger position. £0.7 million of cash is still to be paid out in this year as well. Capital expenditure has been constrained over the last 2 years. We expect the spend in the current year to be close to previous levels at £8 to £10 million as we look to drive business growth in both the UK and South Africa. We remain grateful for the support received from our banking group and the way in which they responded to our covenant waiver requests, which allowed us to take early and decisive action, which was essential. The temporary £95 million maximum net debt covenant expires at the end of June this year. All of our covenants will revert to normal thereafter, to be tested semi-annually. We have access to the full £120 million facility to support our growth plans. It has been a year of action and one that has seen the business well and truly tested, but emerges stronger for it. Nick, over to you.
Okay, thanks, Sean. If I could ask you to turn to slide 13. As you saw from the numbers, the business is in great shape. It's firing on all cylinders with strong momentum. 15 months ago, we put together a plan to navigate this business through COVID and emerge a stronger and better business. We've done that, and at the same time, we have not missed a single beat. We've done it because of the strength of our business model and our proposition. Most definitely, in my view, there has been a flight to quality. Our leading market positions, our strong brands, our channel and product diversity, our stock availability and superior customer service, and our strong financial position have all been key factors in our success. And we've capitalized on those strengths at the expense of our competitors. I've mentioned before the leading positions in the small format and online segments, as well as the house builder segment. All of those have been critical. And we've seen exceptional performances in our Triton, Merlin, and Tile Africa businesses. In terms of current trading, it is encouraging that the momentum in our business is being sustained. And if there's been one silver lining from COVID, it's that this has reinforced our view about the validity of our strategy. Our growth strategy remains valid. There are more opportunities to grow organically as some of our less able competitors struggle, and our acquisition pipeline remains well developed and relevant. Before I get into the weeds of our performance, I thought I'd share with you why I believe Norcross has recovered and responded so well. So if I could ask you to turn to slide 15. This is about our Norcross DNA. This slide captures what Norcross is all about, how it is different from the competition in our sectors and segments. This mix of skills and characteristics, when blended together, has undoubtedly driven our outperformance this year. Experienced management, our focused operating model, leading market positions, scale, our supply chain infrastructure, particularly in China, the diversity of channels and products and geographies, all combined with our fixed capital light and flexible operating models. This has meant that we've capitalized on the challenges and the opportunities to drive outstanding performance. Slide 16. Our channel diversity is particularly well illustrated. Here you can see the breadth of our market coverage, which in turn drives our resilience. If one sector is stuttering, then we usually compensate in other channels stroke customers. So in my opinion, there is strength and resilience in diversity. No one customer accounts for more than 10% of our revenues. I did talk earlier about our success in backing the COVID winners. One particular area where we've been highly successful has been our leading position in the UK house builder segment. You could turn to slide 17. The importance of this sector has been its resilience since 2008/9, And in our experience, once you win a contract, then it remains incredibly sticky. Importantly, as you can see from the chart, there remain significant opportunities to penetrate further and fill both the client and product gaps. Another key element of our success has been our continued investment in new product development. Slide 18. A key element of our COVID operating plan was our continued commitment to invest in our new product development program. Despite COVID, we continued to maintain the investment and our market-leading new product vitality rate at some 27%. We've also capitalized on increasing demand for sanitization products and indeed energy and water-saving products, consistent with our increasing focus on our ESG credentials. That leads me nicely in terms of our ESG strategy, slide 19. The board are committed to increasing the group's ESG focus and to establish an overarching ESG strategy with appropriate targets. There are lots of really good environmental initiatives around the group, including carbon reduction initiatives at our Triton and Johnson Tiles business, and the increasing use of single-use plastics, the reusing of our waste tile body, and the recycling of our wastewater in our manufacturing plants. Our aim is to reduce any negative impact on the environment arising from our operations, and our plan would be to establish meaningful targets. We are also raising the environmental focus in our new product development. Good basic examples would be our range of electric showers, which only heat the water that they use, the water-saving benefits of showering versus bathing, and the energy savings in the use of kitchen hot water taps versus kettles and bottled water. And in terms of our social and governance credentials, then these are well established and comprehensive. Clearly, ESG is an area which we will say more about as we develop our approach and strategies. Now turning to the specifics of this year's performance, please turn to slide 21. Quick recap of our portfolio. All our businesses enjoy market-leading positions and strong brand recognition, and that's been important. 7 market-leading businesses in the UK, all complementary, and importantly, exhibit common drivers of demand. 4 market-leading businesses in South Africa, loosely integrated, and again, common drivers of demand and strong synergies. Supportive of our growth strategy has been the degree of collaboration, which has increased considerably, and the synergies we are now delivering have strong momentum and are meaningful. Just to give you a bit more colour on the UK performance, slide 23, we've experienced a significant recovery in the second half across all our UK businesses, growing on the strong momentum we saw in quarter two. All our UK businesses performed stronger in the second half compared to quarter two, demonstrating the importance and the success of our broad channel coverage as additional channels were allowed to open. Triton, Merlin, Croydex, Abode and Norcross Adhesives were the standout performers. Our strong positions with the COVID winners, Screwfix, Toolstation, Victorian Plumbing, Amazon, Plumworld, were also important. Triton and Merlin were the standout performers. Leading market positions, strong brands, stock availability and service were the key differentiators. So overall, an exceptional performance where we undoubtedly won market share and outperformed the competition. So how did this translate into profitability? Slide 24. Despite all our challenges, our UK business has recovered strongly, surpassing the profitability and margins of FY 2019. And as I said earlier, Triton and Merlin were the standout performers, driving the strong margins from 10.8% to 12.2%, but also the exceptional cash performance. Those of you who have followed the Norcross story will have heard me refer to our Triton business as our jewel in the crown. I'm delighted that I can now say that we've added another jewel. Our Merlin business, a business we acquired in November 2017 for circa 60 million, supported by a 30 million equity raise at £1.72. I'm delighted to report that for the second year in a row, Merlin was our highest margin business, and since acquisition we have generated cash equivalent to over 50% of the purchase price. Now moving to South Africa, I could ask you to turn to slide 26. I don't believe we get full recognition for our position in South Africa, so it's worthy of a recap of how good our South African business is. We have a scale business there comprising four complementary and integrated businesses which are either number one or number two in their respective markets. We have a portfolio of strong trade and consumer brands which are well established. We have a strong track record of growth, improving and sustained profitability and cash generation. We have an excellent, experienced and committed management team that has been tested by COVID and again, frankly, haven't missed a beat. And in terms of the market, the medium-term drivers of demand for our product remain favourable, with low levels of penetration compared to the more developed economies. The markets in which we operate in are sizeable and are highly fragmented, and there is, in my opinion, potential for these markets to grow to be 5 to 10 times the scale of the UK market. All of this supports faster growth opportunities, faster than most more developed economies and markets for our products. So having set the scene, how did the South African business navigate the challenges of COVID? Slide 27. The drivers of the recovery in South Africa were very similar to the UK, but were more pronounced in the retail renovation market. Total revenue grew by 3.2% in the year, and our second half recovery gathered pace and surpassed our expectations. Overall, we grew revenue by some 29% in the second half compared to 6% in the second quarter. Tile Africa was the star performer, growing revenue by 41% and TAL by 24%. Clearly a very resilient performance, further demonstrating the strength of our market position, proposition and operating model. How did this translate into profitability? Slide 28. Despite COVID, we still managed to grow the absolute level of underlying operating profit and improve net margins from 6.5% to 6.6%. The business has been well managed and it bounced back strongly in the second half. The business was also highly cash generative and we have emerged in a stronger financial and relatively stronger competitive position. Several of our competitors have struggled financially. The Dawn Group, and Incledon's would be two good recent examples. Not only have we gained share at their expense, but in the case of Incledon's, which has failed recently, we have acquired their key employees and grabbed their key locations as part of an accelerated House of Plumbing branch expansion plan. So we continue to believe that the medium-term outlook for our business in South Africa remains very positive. Leads us nicely to outlook and strategy. Slide 30. Again, all very familiar to you. The short-term outlook is much more robust than 6 months ago, particularly in the UK, both with the success of the vaccination programme and the continuing benefit from the focus on investing in the home, as the travel sector remains largely closed. And RMI spend remains robust, and Do It For Me now becomes more pronounced. The private new house build sector also remains very robust, with increasing house prices, strong demand and shortage of supply. And as you saw earlier, this is an important segment for Norcross. And in South Africa, the position is much improved than 6 months ago, with home planning and dwelling completions on an upward trajectory combined with an improvement in consumer confidence. So our strategy remains valid. We have strong positions with the COVID winners, with the small format players, the major online and click and collect operators, and a sizable share in the house builder segment. We have definitely won market share. So notwithstanding the short-term supply and inflationary challenges, we are confident that our strategy is working and this will continue to drive our outperformance. In terms of our strategic thinking, slide 31, again, a slide that's familiar to you. Our strategic vision still holds good. The events of the last 15 months haven't changed our thinking. If anything, it strengthened our conviction that the strategy of broadening and adding to our portfolio with quality leading businesses is compelling. Clearly, we've reassessed the time frame from 2023 to 2025 due to COVID, and we continue to execute everything we do consistent with our vision. It's pleasing to note that even in this unprecedented period, we managed to exceed our return on capital target, achieving 18.2%. And we continue to evaluate acquisitions that make strategic sense and meet our criteria. So we continue to be optimistic about the growth prospects in our sector, partly because of the high degree of fragmentation in our markets. Slide 32, the industry and the sectors in which we operate remain highly fragmented, and this continues to provide opportunities to not only grow organically, but also to continue to make attractive add-on acquisitions. We've seen some of our competitors, large and small, struggle with the COVID challenges, and we've taken advantage of that. And this degree of fragmentation, with no evidence of consolidation by other players, continues to provide an excellent platform. In terms of our acquisition track record, slide 33, we've made 5 acquisitions since we launched our strategy in 2013, and the strategy of acquiring market-leading businesses with strong brands, strong management teams, and growth potential has been highly successful. We have grown the business ahead of the market despite COVID disruption and delivered strong growth, including excellent cash conversion. Our acquisition criteria, diligence, and integration processes are well developed, are market leading, and have proved successful. So we remain extremely positive about the further consolidation opportunities that exist. Slide 34, again, a slide that you are familiar with. The position hasn't changed because of COVID. We see the opportunities typically in the product subsectors where we are currently not represented. We see Norcross as a successful consolidator in a large but fragmented market. And the jigsaw pieces to the upper left-hand side of the chart are the interesting ones. And we have a very clear view of what type of business we want to acquire. Key is the market position and growth prospects. Our game plan hasn't changed, and our pipeline continues to be well developed, and we are active in a number of situations. So, ladies and gentlemen, in concluding today's presentation, I want to take you to slide 35. This has been an unprecedented 15 months. I'm delighted our business has recovered strongly and emerged in great shape. Not only stronger financially, but also competitively stronger. We haven't missed a single beat. We've won plaudits from some of our most demanding customers on the back of our service and supply. Our business model and our management teams have responded admirably to every challenge. Our balance sheet is in great shape, and we have a very clear, very focused strategic agenda. Our strong trading momentum has continued. We've just closed May, and our revenue for the 2 months is ahead of the 2 months ended May 2019 by some 23%. Our vision and strategy remains valid and relevant. It continues to govern everything we do, and we remain committed to it. So that concludes today's presentation, but before I open up for questions, I would like to say a few words about Sean. Sean, I would like to express my personal thanks and the board's thanks for the valued contribution that you've made to the Norcross business. I think when I interviewed Sean 5 or 6 years ago, the only Sean Smith I knew was a left-back at Crewe Alexandra, whose only claim to fame was scoring from the halfway line. Well, the other Sean Smith I know today is the very capable Chief Financial Officer. I never asked him to score from the halfway line, but we set ourselves a tougher target, navigating the business through COVID and emerging stronger. We've achieved that, and these will be Sean's last set of results for Norcross, and it's great to see the business in such rude health. My personal thanks for his contribution, his wise counsel, and indeed his friendship. I and the whole Norcross family wish him well, all the best as he pursues his non-executive career. Sean, I'll let you respond.
Yeah. No. All I can say is clearly there's a finishing line still to get through, but I've enjoyed every minute, even last year. It clearly was a challenging year, but as Nick said, the culture of the organisation stepped up when it mattered, and I think that's the thing that marks the group out. So I can only wish Nick and James, who obviously you'll all get to meet, but obviously he's been heavily involved in the strategy and the acquisition pipeline. So I know it's going to be in good hands. So wish everybody in the success in the future, but clearly I'll do everything I can to help with the transition. So thanks from me to Nick and his wise counsel and support. And we were in the trenches together, and I think we came out together. So thank you, Nick.
Okay, thank you, Sean. So I'll now open up the for questions, and thank you for your patience and attention this morning.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. Our first question comes from Toby Thorrington of Edison. Toby, your line is open.
Thanks very much. Morning all. Coming through loud and clear?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Couple of questions to kick off, please. One on South Africa and one on related to supply chain, please. So first of all, South Africa. Obviously, as far as hazardous plumbing goes, market conditions haven't been particularly kind in the last 12 months to you, to them and others in the sector. Can you just update us on where you are with strategy for that business? Obviously heard what you said on the call about opening four branches and not clear whether they're new branches or existing branches from taken over by a competitor and what the bigger strategy is for that business. That's the first question. And secondly, on supply chain more generally for the group, could you just tell us what you're seeing currently with regards to input cost pressures and any product availability issues either for yourselves or elsewhere in the industry, which might have some implication or pull through on Norcross products? And also related to that, what the sort of pass-through pricing experience has been currently, please.
Yeah, okay. So in terms of House of Plumbing, very clear that it's been impacted more than the rest of our businesses because of the commercial emphasis there, less retail. In terms of our strategy, it stays as is. We bought the business, which is number two in the country, but in fact number one in Gauteng. It has did have three branches. We've opened another one, a small one in Polokwane, so we have four. But the plan was always to develop a national rollout strategy, and still is the plan. I mentioned the demise of Ingledon's, which is a well-known leading, or it was, leading plumbers merchant, effectively, in the South African space. That's in business rescue, and we have looked very hard at that business and have acquired one of their former depots, and we've also looked at three other locations, not necessarily acquiring their branches, but acquiring outlets that were available. But the most important thing is that we've acquired their key employees in those three or four locations. And it gives us the opportunity to accelerate our rollout plan, not just in the product areas where House of Plumbing is well represented, but also to extend it into, I would say, you know, larger civils, which Ingledon's was had a leading position in. So it gives us the opportunity to do the rollout. It gives us the opportunity to extend our product portfolio. So,
sorry, Nick, I'll listen. Geographic differences there as well. Before that, you're ready.
Yeah, yeah. So we're opening outside of Gauteng in Nelspruit, which is a key area for Ingledon's and other areas. So we will add at least three. And we will also backfill in one of our main existing depots the entrance into this different product sector by acquiring up to eight of their key specification sales team.
Okay.
And backfill that into our existing infrastructure. So it's a, you know, it should prove to be a very smart move.
Okay, great.
Okay, in terms of supply chain, we are seeing input cost pressure, as is the whole of the industry, and that's across every raw material category, from energy, copper, zinc, glass, timber, cement, and we're monitoring that, and we are implementing price increases and also surcharges, so a combination of both, and there seems to be a acceptance of those price increases, and we're confident that there will be no significant margin erosion through that. Could be some timing issues, but we're confident that given our leading positions, given our brands, and given our supply chain infrastructure, then we can recover those cost input increases. And I think you raised the point, it's almost product availability is ahead of pricing. And we've had more inbound inquiries from new customers this year than we've probably had in the last 24 months. And that's down to product availability, and it's down to service. And what I would say in summary is that we're managing the supply chain better than our competition because of our infrastructure in the Far East. We've got in excess of 30 people there. We're on it every day. And, you know, we're also managing the container issue, container availability, and container costs. And that whole equation is very much at the front of our minds, but we're confident that we're managing it extremely well and better than the competition.
Just out of interest, Nick, sort of final supplementary from me, what sort of freight rates are being quoted sort of 3 to 6 months out compared to current passing rates, just out of interest? Are they starting to sort of taper down a bit?
No, I think you're kidding yourself, Toby, if you think you can get freight rates 3 to 6 months out and hold them. You're lucky if you can get rates 3 to 6 days ahead. They're being cancelled. I mean, there's a slight improvement compared to Q4 of last year, but it's still, you know, hand to mouth and day to day. And I think this is where our local inventory holdings have really been a key differentiator.
Okay. All very clear. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Just like to remind participants to press star one if you'd like to ask a question. We have a question from Peter Ashworth of Shore Capital. Peter, your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good morning, team. Well done on your numbers. I'm sorry not to see you and fellow scribes in the leafy surroundings of Charterhouse Square. And on a personal and professional basis, reiterate, Nick, what you said about Sean, but Gareth Southgate may well be in touch as you're so close to St George's Park. Now to business. Last year when we spoke about it, Lockdown 1 coincided almost uncannily with a key trading period, Q1 for you, and you share with us today April-May trading is 23% up above 19. Presumably it's even more stark bounce back when you look at last year versus this year when you talk about the Q2 recovery in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. I think it would be meaningless for us to quote revenue numbers against 2020 because I think for the first quarter last year, we only just made a operating profit for that first quarter. So as, you know, both the UK and South Africa, we were hit particularly hard in April and started to recover in May and then a bit stronger in June. So I think it would be nonsense for us to quote 2020. And in fact, I've instructed my management teams not to even show me that data for 2020. We certainly don't want complacency in the organisation, so hence why we've used the 2019.
Thank you. And when you presented to us in Great Titchfield Street and the Merlin team presented, and you've highlighted how they're now a jewel in the crown, are there more out there? Question mark.
In short, yes, there are. And wouldn't surprise me, it wouldn't surprise you, that that they're certainly on our radar.
Well, well done, and congratulations to you both, and Sean, good luck to you and your family. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
The next question comes from Sam Cullen of Peel Hunt. Sam, your line is open.
Hi, morning everyone. I've got a couple of questions, if possible. Firstly, on the training performance in the first 2 months of the year, can you give a bit of colour around performance by A, geography, and B, sort of sales channel within, particularly within the UK? That would be helpful. And then secondly, going to the slide on, or slide 17, I think, can you give us a bit of colour around the revenue uplift you're seeing in those house builders when you're adding another product vertical? So someone like Redrow, for example, which seems to have kind of six of your products being sold versus a Bellway with two. What's the scale of increase we should expect to see if you manage to bolt on a Merlin, say, to Bellway, for example?
Yeah, okay. So I think just in terms of current trading, pleasingly, the UK has been pretty steady between month one and month two, April and May. I think we've seen a continuation of the strong momentum both in the Triton and Merlin businesses, strong momentum in Croydex and UK adhesive businesses, and indeed our Tile Africa business. UK at this juncture would be marginally stronger than South Africa, and I think the channels, a 2 month period is difficult to draw any trends between retail and trade. I would say that the strong momentum amongst those COVID winners is still being sustained. House builder, as you well know, is pretty buoyant, and I would say that trade is, there's a bit of a pickup there, I would say, and we've still not really had any significant benefit from our strong positions in social housing, because that is, those budgets and have yet to open up, and the refurbishment programs have yet to open up. So very difficult to draw any conclusions, but if you were to ask me the question, has anything changed from where we left off the previous year, then frankly, it hasn't in any discernible way, which is, particularly encouraging for us. I probably am in the camp that we will see some repurposing of spend into travel when it does open. So it remains helpful to us that the travel sector remains closed. But I expect some normalization of consumer spending when travel reopens properly or fully. So that's the first part of the question. The second part is The house builder segment is significant to us. I would say we were probably accounts for 20% of our UK sales, and securing listings and solus listings in the house builder side are meaningful with the, you know, with these top 10. So the business that we have with Barratt's would be across the group in the order of circa 5 million, and that should give you a feel for what that means for other opportunities. And I said the most important thing is that the, you know, once you win these listings, they do remain with you, assuming you remain competitive and service them properly. So it's a great opportunity. It's a position that we've built from scratch basically 10 years ago when we saw it as an opportunity, and we've certainly invested more resource in this area. So that should give you a feel for what the opportunities might be like here for the both the product gaps and indeed the client gaps.
Great, thank you. Just sorry, just one follow-up as well, actually. On the UK margin, I think it's pretty much, I think, the highest margin that you've managed to deliver in the UK for a decade or so. Can you talk about the sustainability of that and whether there's anything kind of exceptional in that performance this year that we shouldn't expect to repeat this year?
Well, clearly we've had the benefit of the furlough income in there, but by the same token, I would say that there's been abnormal costs of operating in a COVID environment, and of course the indirect impact of COVID, particularly in the last quarter, on container costs. So I think it's certainly, in my view, sustainable, but clearly we've got some challenges at the moment with input cost pressure, inflationary pressure, and freight costs not abating as quickly as we might have expected. But I would see that definitely within our gift of sustaining that, and you know it will be supported by increased collaboration and increased synergies. You know, the new listings that we're getting through collaboration, the fact that we've got Merlin listed with Screwfix, the fact that we've got Merlin into Wix, these are, you know, additional revenue streams without, additional infrastructure costs.
Great, thank you.
The final question comes from Kristen Horse from Numis. Kristen, your line is open.
Thanks very much. Morning, guys. Two questions from me. The first one, just on NPD, and Nick, I know you did speak about this, but just a bit more colour on that vitality index. I think it was 27%. I mean, you know, how does that compare in your thoughts to peers, and how important a competitive advantage is it, the sort of NPD work that you do? And the second one is just on margins in South Africa. If I look back to FY14, obviously is quite a low margin, and that increased to about 9% in FY18, and subsequently, even before COVID, it's sort of just come off a little bit. Just sort of wondering what you think the right level of margin or targets of margin for that division is based on the current business units that you have there.
Yeah. Okay. So I think NPD is critical. It's the lifeblood our business. I've spoken to a lot of people in the industry, and I think our target of getting to, you know, 33 and a third, which is calculated as the last year's sales percentage that comes from products that are introduced in the last 3 years. Now, that's quite a tough index. I've certainly spoken to bigger businesses than ours in this sector, and they use a index based on 5 years. Ours is three, and, you know, that keeps the focus. So, you know, I've heard people quote 40% on a five-year basis. I haven't done that calculation, but I think ours is certainly up there with, you know, consumer goods generally. And I would expect the next year, the following year, that we'll have a, you know, further kicker. And critically important in normalized conditions where you're not getting price increases, but you can improve the margin by adding extra features that, you know, the consumer is prepared to pay for. Margins in South Africa, we've got the dilution effect at this moment in time, which we always knew with House of Plumbing, lighter margins than some of our existing businesses, and we're working on that on a two-pronged basis. One is the store rollout to get more scale, and the second is to source more product from our supply chain in China rather than via agents in South Africa. And I think the other thing to say is that there has been some price pressure in our adhesive business. It's what we expected. It's a business that enjoys nice margins, and we've had new entrants. So again, product development, not just on the adhesive side, but also on the broader construction side, is something that we're focusing on. I think the other thing I would add, you know, we've parked the additional tile manufacturing capacity in South Africa, clearly because of COVID, but we will need to come back to that because we are currently buying a significant amount of tile from our largest competitor, which one could argue isn't necessarily sustainable. And if we made it ourselves, then we could get the full see-through margin on that. So I think directionally, you know, I don't have any issue in targeting towards the 10% for the South African business once we have those initiatives in place.
We have another question from Clyde Lewis of Peel Hunt. Clyde, please go ahead.
Thank you. Morning, both. And as well as wishing Sean all the best for the future, and I'm sure you'll add to whatever board you end up joining to. So all the best there. But in terms of questions, I think I've got three, if I may. One around sort of acquisition prices and expectations of the sellers. I mean, Nick, it's obviously sort of, I mean, as you're seeing, I'm sure a lot of the potential targets are also seeing better trading. Has their price expectation jumped too much? And is that a sort of stumbling block, or a sort of discussions more around sort of, I suppose, the potential for the businesses going forward? The second one I had around, I suppose, prices, and you've obviously sort of flagged the cost pressures you've got. Can you give us a little bit of a help in terms of what sort of price inflation you think you're going to need to see across the board to sort of offset those sort of cost pressures that you've got coming through? And the last one I had was on, I suppose, stock levels amongst the customer base, you know, the merchants and less so the builders, but certainly the DIY stores, the tool stations, screw fixes, et cetera. Where do you think they are in terms of stocking levels? And is that something that at some point is going to have to be refreshed by them and they're going to have to sort of over-order, if you like, to get back to more normal levels as well?
Okay. So I think acquisition prices, my valuations, my sense is that valuations are starting to climb. I think that, you know, we're getting through this period of you know, how do we factor in the COVID disruption? How do we normalise the business? And in fact, it's probably, one could argue, it's you know, it's still how do you discern the normalised trend in any business? And that is a, you know, a key challenge for us given the unprecedented nature of what we've seen. But my take is that valuations are, you know, for the good businesses, are increasing. But I think, you know, we're not about buying turnarounds. This is about buying businesses with strong positions that, you know, we can see an opportunity to take it on to the next level, like the Merlin business. You know, how can we double it? How can we double it through our broad channels, access to those broad channels, and also access to our infrastructure and everything else? So, you know, it's the right price for the right business, I would say. Selling prices, I've seen ranges in the industry from 5 to 6% increases to surcharges of up to 12%. And certainly there are some businesses that have implemented more than one price increase, including surcharges. I think if you take it in the round as to what we offer, product, service, availability, then, and we were only talking about this the other day, you know, if you look at the build cost of a, you know, a bathroom, then material cost is still less than the labour cost, certainly for our products. And you know, we still think there's, you know, we can recover those cost increases. There's almost like I'm going to call it a reluctant acceptance. And availability is what matters. So that's selling prices and cost pressures. Stock levels is a difficult one. You know, we do monitor our EPOS sales out of some of our bigger customers, and my assessment would be that stock levels haven't increased significantly, and, you know, there probably is a reluctance to do that, and particularly, you know, that's the advantage of dealing with us, that through our own local stock holdings, I know that we've won, you know, plaudits with the likes of Screwfix for our service levels, then, you know, they can rely on the, if you like, the, you know, the proper players and the grown-up players in this market to support them. And you know, that speaks volumes with the business that we do with Screwfix. So I don't sense that they're going to be, that the merchants and the DIY players are going to be carrying additional stocks. There'll be a, you know, probably a reversion to the to the mean in due course. So I'm certainly not of the view that they're carrying additional stocks, safety stocks at this juncture.
Yeah, I was probably thinking the other way around, that they're probably sort of running less stock than they might like, but I suppose we'll see how that pans out going forward.
Yeah, I think it's more of, quite frankly, Clyde, it's, you know, it's the availability. Can they get the product? And certainly we've had inbound inquiries where, you know, we can't get this product, we can sell you another product similar.
A lot of that. I mean, in terms of sort of absolute product availability, are there particular categories that you're most worried about in terms of supply of parts from the Far East?
No, there's nothing that, you know, specifically that anybody's shouting about that is that's a key focus for us. It's generally a common issue, and, you know, I've gone on record before that, you know, I haven't seen, we haven't got huge stockouts, but typically we don't have any.
Yeah.
But we've got stockouts in every single one of our businesses. So it's an industry problem. It doesn't matter whether it's copper, zinc, glass, plastics, polymer, cement,
PCB.
You name it. You know, we operate on a probably, you know, two-day order book. And, it's difficult to get any sort of any additional visibility. So I think it's broad spread rather than, you know, it's not like we're microchips anything like that.
Okay. Thank you, Jess.
Cheers. Okay.
We don't appear to have any further questions, so I'll hand it back to yourselves, Sean and Nick, to conclude the call.
Okay. So many thanks indeed. Thanks for your patience and attention, everybody. And I'm sure we'll catch up with you in due course. Many thanks indeed.
Many thanks from me as well for the kind words. Appreciate it. Thank you. Speak soon.